All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is December 11th, 2025. And our top story this morning, you hear that sound? It's the sweet sound of burr coming from the Federal Reserve. Oh my God, they started it already. They just stopped QT, like freaking yesterday. They just stopped QT. And they're already starting QE again, quantitative easing, or not QE. I don't care what you call it. I'm sure there's some industry quack out there right now trying to explain why, oh, when reserves are created and shuffled into a certain sector of liquidity, it's not monetary printing. It's not, they're printing money, whatever you call it. They're expanding the monetary base. They're going to bring back inflation. And I'm just amazed this is not the biggest news in the world right now. Everybody's focused about, oh, there was some dissensions at the Fed and two guys said, no, we shouldn't be cutting rates. Who cares? They're printing money again. So here's what actually happened yesterday. When Powell came out during his press conference, he said they are going to start resuming purchases of short-term Treasury securities starting at a rate of about $40 billion a month through April in order to ensure ample reserves are in alignment with monetary policy. And he says this is separate from monetary policy. It was another like hilarious thing that he threw in there. Oh, this is different. It's like that guy in the front fell off video. We towed it outside the environment, so you don't have to worry about it. So all of this lingo, what does it actually mean? They're printing money. They're going to buy short-term Treasury bills. And they're going to do this between now and April at a rate of $40 billion a month. They didn't say they would stop in April. They just said they would revisit in April. And why April? April is tax day. They're worried about a liquidity crisis around tax day this year. That's what they're telling us without saying it. And they're printing money while not calling it money printing. And they just stopped QT. And they didn't even get anywhere near the level of reserves where we were before they started QE the last time. God, they're already starting up the money printers again. Now, right now in the press, like they're making these big deals in Bloomberg about how, oh, there was dissension. There were two people voted against the rate cut. And there was like six non-voting members through subtle cues in the dot plot or the summary of economic projections were suggesting that they too were opposed to the rate cuts and a signal to President Trump that they're trying to assert Fed independence. Who cares about any of that crap, that stupid political nonsense? They cut rates and they're printing money again. And you can cry Fed independence and those stupid quacks in the press pool at the Federal Reserve can make their silly political statements until they're red in the face. They're giving President Trump exactly what he wants, more money and lower interest rates to inflate an asset bubble. Oh my God, I can't believe how quick that happened. We all knew it was coming. But hell, guys, could you wait a month? Could you at least let like a symbolic, insignificant month go by before you start printing money again? The ink ain't even dry on QT, and you've already started QE again. Good God. By the way, they're also talking, and Powell mentioned this yesterday, they see risks of higher inflation, and they see risks of higher unemployment. In other words, stagflation. And Powell's like, look, we only have one tool, monetary policy, and so we have to pick one fight. And so, you know, Jerome Powell reaches into his pocket. He pulls out a Pokeball and he says, inflation, I choose you. And this monster comes out and just says, Zerpenburr, that little Pokemon of monetary policy that he's using, he's going to pick. He said, we have a choice. People losing their jobs or the money becoming worthless. Silly rabbit. They will choose the money becoming worthless every single time. Oh, what the heck happened at the Federal Reserve yesterday? And meanwhile, we've had something incredible just happened with Oracle earnings yesterday. Oracle stock is down big on a revenue miss this morning, but that is not the big story here. The extraordinary thing happening this morning is the stock market is punishing an increase in AI CapEx spending. That has never happened before. Every company, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Meta, all of them, NVIDIA, any of these companies announcing a big increase in their CapEx spend for AI has been an automatic big green candle for the entire sector across the board. That ain't happening this morning. Oracle came out and said, okay, we missed on our revenue, but don't worry, we're going to spend even more money on data centers and our remaining performance obligations, which is this totally contrived, made-up metric to make it look like we're going to make all this money in the future. We swear, I promise. Market said, don't care about that. We don't think you can pay for this stuff. And they're punishing Oracle stock here. Guys, anything in the open AI sphere is hosed here, is what they're saying. Sam Altman has made promises that we all know Sam Altman can't possibly pay for, especially now that he has, at best, the second best product in the space, arguably the third or the fourth best product. I'm not really a critic on that. I hate them all, to be honest with you. But that is big. The market punishing AI CapEx, and it's dragging down the whole AI space this morning. Meanwhile, we had 42 state attorneys generals signed a letter to AI companies yesterday worrying that chatbots are encouraging users' delusions, creating mental health risks for children and adults. 42 states' attorneys generals. Keep in mind, guys, there aren't that many states that didn't sign this letter. Let's put it that way. And I'm sure California was one of them because all the AI companies are in California. But 42 of them are basically saying, what are you guys doing? Your stupid chatbots and their sycophantic behavior are indulging delusions. And some of these stories out there, like chatbots convincing people that divine intervention means they should go out and harm themselves and others. What the hell? And if it was as simple as putting a line of code into this software that says, don't do that, don't tell people to do crazy shit, they would have done it. They can't just put that line of code in there because the whole thing would break down if they did it, which means this technology is not nearly as advanced as we think it is. It's not nearly as smart as we think it is, because when we tell it, don't convince people to do crazy shit, it stops working. How smart could it be? It's not. Also, Time Magazine's giving us another top signal this morning. The U.S. just seized an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela, messing with the boats. By the way, it wasn't a drug boat. It was an oil boat, and that oil boat was bigger than all the drug boats we blew up combined. Oh, that's right. It was never really about drugs. It's been about oil the whole time. We've got $901 billion of defense spending just sailed through Congress, passing by a huge margin. Not much talk about that in the press. Not much debate about that in the 24-hour news cycles. They're still arguing over who gets to use the ladies' room. Nope, $901 billion worth of stuff that goes boom. That gets rubber stamped every time. Weren't we going to cut spending on defense earlier this year? Didn't Hegseth say something about an 8% a year cut in defense spending for the next eight years, whatever that? Yeah, that's right. They were never serious about cutting spending. We've got Mexico has approved up to 50% tariffs on China. This is a big one. All right. Now, there's obviously a lot of trade policy. This is giving President Trump what he wants while, you know, of course, insisting that they're not giving President Trump what they want. Mexico putting tariffs on China. Remember, the Chinese are transshipping a lot of their goods. We data exports to the U.S. were way down, but overall exports were up. Grain of salt, Chinese data point, I know. But they're shipping to other countries with lower tariffs, and then they're shipping the Chinese goods into the U.S. So Mexico putting these big tariffs on China, that's important because it should put a dent in transshipment. And this story also touches something that I've been working on for the last, well, year, but I've been working a lot on it this week. Guys, I'm really deep into this story that I'm putting out that I really think is a huge, huge deal. Some people might say it's a small story. I think it's massive. And this story touches that. This one's kind of taking a toll on me, I'm not going to lie. I've done a lot of videos. I've done a lot of stories on this channel. This one's been hard, and I want to get this one right. Look for that over the next day or two. I've been trying to get this thing out. It's crazy. I keep finding more with every rock I turn over. More to say about that one in the days ahead. China is taxing birth control and condoms. That's funny. After decades of telling people you're not allowed to reproduce, now they're trying to tax people who don't want to reproduce. It's almost like the government should just get out of the baby-making business altogether. What a concept, right? And derivatives in private markets, the latest Frankenstein's monster, dog shit wrapped in cat shit, to come out of Wall Street, trying to push derivatives in private markets. We're going to have to talk about that one at the end of the show. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button. So you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the Melon Heads, because we do this one every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is lower by 25 points or 0.36%. Oracle earnings are weighing on everything despite Fed go burr. The Dow is modestly positive, 29 points or 0.06% higher, but the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, off by 133 points or 0.52% lower, pairing its losses from earlier in the morning, but still down this morning. The dollar is weaker here, off by 37 basis points, 98.28. Fed go burr, Fed go zerp. Dollar gets weaker. That's how that works, guys. Meanwhile, U.S. interest rates are down across the board. I don't think this is going to last much longer, to be honest with you, though. The 30-year yield, 4.765, off by 3 points. The 10-year's at 4.114, off by almost 6 points this morning. The 2-year's 3.511, off by 5.5 points. And the 1 month is off 2 points at 3.685. Maybe a little bit of a flight to safety going on this morning with that sell-off in the AI names. That's easy monetary policy, of course. Looking over at metals this morning, spot gold is off by a dollar, maybe $2 here, 0.04% lower at 42.26. Meanwhile, February COMEX futures are higher by $30, 42.54. That's up by about 0.75%. Check out silver. Oh, I just love it. 62.77 for spot silver, higher by 95 cents, another 1.55%. We just talked about $61 silver yesterday. Now we're at 62.77, but wait, there's more. March COMEX futures, $63.11, up another $2 this morning, 3.4% higher. Do I hear $64? I like the shiny. Hey, let's look real quick at that chart. Oh, my God. Look, we've all been looking for this we've been waiting for it. That's silver, all right? And by the way, if only this had happened during silver squeeze back in 2021, why couldn't we have had that big candle right here? Oh, I would be a much wealthier man today were that to have happened. But we got there eventually anyway. 62.68, that is just beautiful. Up in a vertical line. Guys, be careful trying to chart this one. Be careful trying to pick targets. Keep in mind the crash that happened in 2011 after a similar vertical new move. We are in uncharted territory here. So there's not a lot to say about that. Also, the gold to silver ratio down to 67.4. I drew a line at that 65 level. That is important because that is the historical average going back over the last 40 years, give or take. And that is also the level where we bounced during this silver squeeze in the gold to silver chart. So I'm kind of using that as a signal for a potential top in silver, at least relative to gold. Doesn't mean both can't keep going up in tandem. It just means silver right now is outperforming gold. And I suspect when this gets to about 65, that's when gold is either going to start to outperform or maybe they both trade sideways. Either way, I think the ratio takes a breather there. Back in the commodities board, we've got copper up 1.9%. Platinum up 2.1%. Palladium is up by 1.8%. And oil is lower here by 1.9%. Interesting, considering that Venezuelan tanker for January WTI futures. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, we are lower. Interesting. When did this one start? Oh, that's right. This one started right around the time Oracle reported their earnings. These are daily candles. That won't show on the chart. But Bitcoin's not doing so good here this morning, 90,162. And here's the big one here. Fed says it will start technical buying of treasury bills to manage market liquidity. Again, why is this not front and center in everybody's newsfeed this morning? This is huge news. Look at how they're trying to avoid calling this money printing, to avoid calling it QE. We will start technical buying of treasury bills to manage market liquidity. Why don't you just say you're printing money again? Why don't you speak in language that ordinary people can understand so that they can see what's coming, that you're going to destroy their money even more, even though they're still trying to catch their breath from the last time you punched them in the stomach with inflation in 2022. The Federal Reserve on Wednesday said it would imminently start buying short-dated government bonds to help manage market liquidity levels to ensure the central bank retains firm control over its interest rate target system. We're printing money. The tech-oriented purchases will commence on Friday, the central bank said, as part of the policy announcement associated with its latest Federal Open Market Committee meeting. We're printing money. When it begins buying, the initial round will total around $40 billion in treasury bills per month. The Fed said in a statement that its buying will remain elevated for a few months to offset expected large increases in non-reserve liabilities in April, adding that after that, the pace of total purchases will be significantly reduced, not eliminated, in line with expected seasonal patterns in Federal Reserve liabilities. We're printing money. Speaking after the Fed meeting, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said the buying is solely for the purpose of maintaining an ample supply of reserves over time, thus supporting effective control of our policy rate. And he added, these issues are separate from and have no implications for the stance of monetary policy. We're printing money. Okay, how is expanding the monetary base somehow not part of monetary policy? Oh, the front fell off the boat, so we towed it outside the environment. What do you mean you towed it outside the environment? Yeah, we towed it out into the middle of the ocean where there's nothing but whales and fish, outside the environment. Yeah, we're expanding our monetary base. We're printing money. But don't worry, that is separate and has no bearing on our monetary policy. How about we just start talking to people like they're adults? How about we treat people like they have the maturity to comprehend what this means for them instead of this gaslighting bullshit? Oh, that's right. If we did that, then people would start to realize what the truth was and that the monetary policy is doomed, and they'd all run out and start buying this stuff. Guys, do you really think that this headline has nothing to do with this chart? It's the same thing. We're looking at the same freaking thing. And look at this. This is the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. All right, this is the amount of money. This is the amount of stuff they have bought with printed money. This is their treasury bonds, the treasury bills, and of course their mortgage-backed securities. And this stupid game started with the GFC in 2008, and we have never looked back. Only token efforts to reduce the size of the balance sheet, ending in catastrophe and more money printing every single time, hit its peak during the ridiculousness of the COVID hysteria. We tried to fix it. We failed some banks here. Oh, don't worry, expand the balance sheet again. Then we reduced it a little bit more, and now we're already going to send this chart upward again. Now they're making a big deal out of this. Silent dissenters reveal growing Fed resistance to Powell's cuts. I think they're trying to phrase this like the Fed giving the middle finger to President Trump, like, oh, maybe they won't cut again at the next meeting. Maybe they're done here after this. You really think so? If they're done with their easy policy, then why are they printing money? Why are they increasing reserves by $40 billion a month? What are they so worried about in April? Why did nobody tell us? What is it that's got you concerned in April? Oh, you're worried the repo market might blow up again? We know that's what they're worried about. Tax time is one of those points that stresses repo markets, stresses liquidity. Good God, what are they doing? They're doing it again. They're doing it to us again. And look, inflation is rising and unemployment is rising. And then we've got this absolute nonsense from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Department of Labor this morning. This is initial claims. And look, guys, this data came out last week and this big drop in initial claims. I remember looking at that and just saying the gauge is broken. And look, as a nuclear engineer, they teach us all the time to trust our instrumentation. They say, you know, engineers and control room operators looking at gauges and not believing what their instrumentation is telling them causes problems. And so, you know, don't do that. But at the same time, when an instrument is broken and you know it's broken and you don't fix it, that also causes problems. And so imagine you're driving along the road and you see your speedometer wiggling back and forth between 80 miles an hour and 20 miles per hour. But out of the corner of your eye, you notice the trees are still going by at about the same rate. You think maybe your speedometer's broken? Take a look at initial jobless claims. All right, they go from 208 for the week ending November 22nd down to 192 and then shoot right back up to 236. The gauge is not working. We can all look with our eyes and ears at what's going on in the job market, and we can tell something's not working here. Whatever they're doing with the government data, with the labor statistics, this is too important to mess around. Beware the infectious stink of politics in economic reporting. And look at the same thing with continuing claims. Again, the gauge, bullshit. Let's just call this what it is. This is bullshit. This is categorical bovine excrement. 1.94 million down to 1.84 million in a week. Well, congratulations to the 100,000 people who miraculously found jobs and dropped off the unemployment rolls last week. I bet we're going to get a great jobs report now. or maybe, just maybe, following a government shutdown and the appointment of lackeys into government statistics positions, just maybe this data is wrong. Meanwhile, we got Oracle shares plummet 11% in pre-market, dragging down AI stocks. This one hit yesterday. This is a big shift in the market's reaction to some of this AI nonsense. This is very important. Oracle shares plummeted 11% in pre-market trading on Thursday, extending yesterday's losses after the firm reported disappointing results. The cloud computing and database software maker reported lower than expected quarterly revenue on Wednesday, despite booming demand for its artificial intelligence infrastructure. Its revenue came in at $16.06 billion compared with $16.21 billion expected by analysts. Uh-oh, revenue miss from a cloud company? That's not supposed to happen. It dragged other AI-related names down with it, including chip darling NVIDIA, which was last seen down 1.5%. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. We've also got Micron, Microsoft, CoreWeave, AMD all down this morning. Oracle has been the subject of much market chatter since raising $18 billion in a jumbo bond sale in September, marking one of the largest debt issuances for the tech industry on record. The name shot onto investor agendas when it inked a $300 billion deal with OpenAI in the same month, a deal OpenAI can't possibly pay for, and everybody was overlooking that at the time. Oracle made further moves in cloud infrastructure, where it battles big tech names like Amazon, Microsoft, and Google for AI contracts. Now we got this one this morning. Oracle is having its own code red AI moment. And that's actually not an exaggeration. Anyone wanting reassurance that building the infrastructure for artificial intelligence isn't going to break the bank won't have enjoyed Oracle Corp's latest earnings report. Wall Street's de facto barometer of AI fears served up several unwelcome surprises, including $10 billion of quarterly cash burn and a massive increase in capital spending. More worrying, it failed to satisfactorily answer two simple questions. Just how much is all of this going to cost? And what happens if its cornerstone customer, OpenAI, can't pay? Oh my, how the narrative has shifted here. The company already has $105 billion of net debt, including lease obligations, according to data compiled by Bloomberg, pushing it toward the more indebted end of investment-grade borrowers. Set against this, Oracle's $523 billion of contracted future revenue sounds impressive. It's roughly five times higher than a year ago, but more than half of that relates to its work for Sam Altman's OpenAI, a heavily loss-making startup whose early AI lead no longer looks unassailable, with the vastly richer Google gaining ground and its new Gemini model winning rave reviews. Altman has declared code red. If I were Oracle, I'd be worried too. Guys, this $523 billion of remaining performance obligations, it's not going to happen. Almost all of that money's coming from OpenAI, who has the second, maybe the third, fourth, or fifth best product in the industry. OpenAI loses money. They don't have anywhere near the $500 billion that they promised to spend. This isn't happening. And look at Oracle stock this morning. Bloodbath in Oracle stock, down 13.9%, $192.36. Guys, this is the bubble happening. I mean, let's just look at like a five-year chart of this. This is starting to look like the tech bubble here, all right? This thing, it had this ridiculous 30% run-up after their last quarter when they announced that remaining performance obligations. Oracle's remaining performance obligations in September of 2025 as the top of the AI bubble, and it has come straight down ever since. Still up year-to-date, though. Year-to-date, it's still up 33%. This thing could fall a lot further. Meanwhile, big tech warned over AI delusional outputs by U.S. attorneys generals. Guys, don't let your kids use chatbots. That's all I can tell you. Some of the stories I've read, I have decided not to put these on the air because they're disturbing and they'll probably get me flagged. These things, they don't tell you your idea is bad. And think about the things an emotionally disturbed teenager might come up with, and they confide in these things and they don't tell them stop. Microsoft, Meta, Google, and Apple were among 13 companies that received a warning from a bipartisan group of state attorney generals, according to a letter from the state leaders who said their chatbots' delusional outputs could be violating state laws. Guys, it was 42 state attorneys generals, almost all of them. The letter was made public on Wednesday. In it, dozens of attorneys general said the chatbots encourage users' delusions, creating mental health risks for kids and adults. They pointed to media reports about a teen confiding in an AI chatbot about his plan to unalive himself. They called on companies to allow independent audits of their products, adding that state and federal regulators should be able to review them. And as that is all going on, we've got Time Magazine's Person of the Year. Thank you, Time Magazine, for giving us yet another top signal. The architects of AI are the Person of the Year. And then we got rekindling that old photo of the guys building the Empire State Building here. There's Zuck, Lisa Su from AMD. There's Elon Musk, Jensen Huang, Sam Altman. Who's that? Is that Ilya Sutskever? I'm not sure who that is. Maybe that's the guy from Amazon, what, Andy Jassy. And then there's Dario Amodi from Anthropic. I don't know who this lady is. But yeah, this is all the hucksters and the hypesters of AI. And yeah, if only there were signs that the top was in. There you go. Meanwhile, U.S. seizes a sanctioned oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela, Trump says. I thought it was about the drugs. I thought we were trying to stop the narco-terrorists. Why? What does an oil tanker have to do with that? The U.S. has seized a sanctioned oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela, President Trump said on Wednesday, a move that sent oil prices higher and sharply escalated tensions between Washington and Caracas. We've just seized a tanker off the coast of Venezuela. Large tanker, very large, largest one ever, actually. And other things are happening, said Trump, who's been pressuring Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to step down. Let's see about the tanker here. British Maritime Risk Management Group Vanguard said the very large crude carrier, VLCC, named the Skipper, was believed to have been seized off Venezuela early Wednesday. The U.S. has imposed sanctions on the tanker for what it says was involvement in Iranian oil trading when the vessel was called the Adisa. The Skipper left Venezuela's main oil port of Jose between December 4th and 5th after loading some 1.8 million barrels of Venezuela's Mary heavy crude. It transferred about 200,000 barrels near Curacao to the Panama-flagged Neptune 6 bound for Cuba before the seizure, according to satellite information analyzed by tankertrackers.com and internal data from Venezuelan state oil company PDVSA. Guyana's maritime authority said Skipper was falsely flying the country's flag. The vessel had transported Venezuelan oil to Asia between 2021 and 2022. And asked what would happen with the oil, Trump said, we keep it, I guess. Maybe you want to figure out what you're going to do with the boat full of oil before you send those spec ops guys down there to go seize it. You'd think that's something. All right, we got a giant tanker full of 1.8 million barrels of crude. What the hell do we do with it? Keep it, I guess. Sell it. Wars have been started over less, guys. Meanwhile, the U.S. House backs massive defense policy bill, and the Senate's next. This is amazing. We fight over everything in Congress. We can't agree on what time it is, but here's $901 billion for stuff that goes boom and kills people. Rubber stamp that baby. Sail that right through to the Senate. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a massive policy bill on Wednesday, authorizing a record $901 billion in annual military spending, paving the way for the must-pass measure to become law for a 65th straight year. Why is that a must-pass measure? We must pass $901 billion worth of, like, look, I get it. The world is sleepwalking into World War III, and we need to counter the threat of China. But $901 billion? I thought we have a debt problem. I thought we have a spending problem. I thought we were cutting spending. I know, a silly rabbit, cut spending. What was I thinking? I know. I'll see myself out. The tally was 312 to 112. It wasn't even close, this vote, in favor of the National Defense Authorization Act, or the NDAA, sending it for consideration by the Senate, which is expected to pass in the next week. The $901 billion in defense spending is $8 billion more than President Trump's request for earlier this year. This is great. All right. He's like, oh, well, I want $895 billion, or what? Don't make me do math. $893 billion. Oh, you know what? Here's an extra $8 billion on your way out. Help yourself to a few billion more on your way out. Here's a $901 billion authorization. Get yourself something nice. Again, no argument, no debate about this. This just sails right through. Meanwhile, Mexico approves up to 50% tariffs on China and other nations. This is not being sold as an acquiescence to President Trump, but that's exactly what this is. They're giving Trump what he wants so that China can't transship their products into the U.S. through Mexico. Mexican lawmakers gave final approval for new tariffs on Asian imports, broadly aligning with U.S. efforts to tighten trade barriers against China. As President Claudia Sheinbaum seeks to protect local industry, Mexico's Senate on Wednesday voted in favor of the bill that imposes tariffs of between 5 and 50% on more than 1,400 products from Asian nations that don't have a trade deal with Mexico. The bill passed with 76 votes in favor, 5 against, and 35 abstentions. Sheinbaum's embrace of tariffs track with U.S. concerns regarding so-called transshipment of Chinese exports through other countries and follow action by Canada last year to also emulate U.S. levies on electric cars, steel, and aluminum from China. And you better believe this is going to affect the fentanyl trade too, guys, because where do you think the Mexicans get all their fentanyl precursors, and where, how do you think they launder their money? They use finished consumer goods from China. We'll have more to say about that later this week. Meanwhile, China pushes for a baby boom with a new tax on birth control. This is great. We're not even 10 years removed from the country finally making it legal to even have a second kid. Now their population is collapsing, and they're like, put a tax on birth control. Gotta love it. How about the government just gets out of the baby business altogether? What a concept, right? Hey, you want to have a kid? Should I have a kid? Should I not have a kid? Oh, I don't know. What does my local commissar have to say about that? Maybe that was a shit idea to begin with. I grew up I grew up in the one-child era in China when officials from local family planning offices regularly visited my female relatives to persuade them to quit the idea of having more children. Back then, free condoms were available on many university campuses for both accessible contraception and raising health awareness. For decades, the message was clear. China wanted to limit births and contraception, even coerced forms, was a tool of state policy. Now, 10 years after China first relaxed its one-child rule, the policy winds have reversed so sharply that the latest move sounds almost surreal. China is going to impose a 13% value-added tax on contraceptive drugs and devices, including morning-after pills and condoms, for the first time starting in January 1st. And look, guys, this story goes hand-in-hand with this BS from the Fed this morning. I mean, there's a reason why the population is collapsing in the entire, we'll say, northern hemisphere. In certain parts of the southern hemisphere, the population is still growing. But in Europe and all of Asia and North America, the population is collapsing. Why? Because people can't afford to have kids. Life got so expensive because they printed so much money and gave it to themselves, causing asset and consumer price inflation while simultaneously suppressing wages. Now people can't afford to have a family. It's very simple. We used to be able to raise 4 kids on a single income. Now you can barely survive 2 adults by themselves on dual incomes, let alone any kids. And then, of course, China, you know, Chairman Mao, God Emperor Mao, gets this wonderful idea. Oh, we want to make steel. So after the Cultural Revolution, where we just arbitrarily slaughtered tens of millions of people because of thought policing, then we're going to make all the farmers make steel in their backyards. And they're like, well, the farmers don't know how to make steel. They're like, that's not important. Just make steel. And then they're like, shit, we forgot to grow food. And then 60 million people starved to death. And what's their solution? Oh, if we can't feed everybody, the problem is obviously not our stupid policy. No, the problem is too many people. Let's make it illegal to have children. And then the population starts collapsing a few decades later. And now they're like, tax birth control. Maybe you guys would just stop messing with people's lives. What a freaking concept. Hey, I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. Top exchanges set sights on derivatives for private markets. Last one of the day here, guys. This is just great, all right? These guys just cannot help themselves. They are so predictably treacherous. And just think in your head, what's the worst idea you could possibly come up with? And I promise you, somebody on Wall Street is years ahead of you and already has this thing ready to roll. Some of the world's biggest exchanges have set their sights on creating new derivatives tied to the fast-growing $16 trillion universe of privately held assets. Options powerhouse CBOE Global Markets and CME Group, you know, the people who just shut down the silver market on Black Friday, yeah, them, the largest U.S. derivatives exchange, are both considering how they can launch futures and options based on private companies and the investment firms that own them. Intercontinental Exchange, which also owns the New York Stock Exchange, said it will look at similar products once it sees more demand from customers. The derivatives markets have long played a central role in giving investors exposure to public markets, but there has been no parallel way to bet on the value of assets that aren't publicly traded. And that's for good reason that we don't have a way to do that, because there are still plenty of questions to be worked out. One big problem is the lack of trading in the shares of the underlying companies, which can make it hard to determine real-time pricing for the value of these assets. How the hell are you going to create derivative products against an asset that you don't even know the value of it? You don't know the price of it. This is just a perfect opportunity for fraud. There are also challenges gaining access to information. Private companies don't have the same reporting requirements as public entities, in many cases only sharing audited financial statements with creditors. And it's the information flow that makes derivatives so successful, said Rob Hocking, CBOE's head of derivatives. When you get into private markets, that dynamic changes. In other words, they lie and they conceal information. When you're creating a product on that and large pools of derivative products, in particular, where the whole pool of derivatives is dependent on the underlying product that you're building that derivative on, that gets a little more scary. Guys, how can you possibly sell derivatives on a product where the prices are just completely and arbitrarily made up by the people who own them, and they never sell them? They never sell them because there's nobody who wants to buy them. How can you possibly create derivative products against that? How are they even talking about this? Oh my God. There's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming, fellas. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to the moderate voice. Thank you very much, Mr. Moderate Voice. He says, MREITs. That is, I believe, mortgage real estate investment trusts, REITs that invest in mortgages. With Fed roll-off of MBS and T-bill buys. Look, I think you don't want to touch anything in housing finance right now. And if you're not convinced, I would strongly urge you to start listening to Melody Wright. She did a fantastic interview on George Gammon the other day. She did another fantastic interview on Adam Taggart's channel, Thoughtful Money, the other day. They are making all the same mistakes in housing finance that they made in 2008. They're just calling it something different. I just don't think you can touch this stuff right now. You don't want anything to do with an IOU from somebody else. That's just my take on that. But thank you very much, Moderate Voice, for being a Melonhead member for 6 months. Oh, man, how do we say this? Ryu Kirito, Mr. Ryu. Thank you, Art Ryu. He says, my morning started with a rock going through the back window of my day cab semi. So happy Thursday. Yikes, brother. It's a cold one, too. I hopefully you're down south somewhere where maybe it ain't so cold. It's a tough morning to lose that back window. I'm sorry that happened to you. My day started kind of weird, too. I've been in kind of a weird place the last couple of days. This story I'm working on is really it's messing with my head. I'm not going to lie. This has been a tough one to work on, and I've been working on this for more than a year. It's been one of those mornings, Ryu. I'm with you on that one. Hope your day gets better from here, brother. Thank you for supporting the channel. Mr. 4Ps says, can't thank you enough for what you, Travis and Melody, do. Shout out to my fellow doomers, Travis and Melody. Travis being from Real Estate Mindset and Melody, who I just mentioned. May God bless you all, either one of you, for POTUS. Oh, my God, no. Oh, my God, no. Sorry, guys. I had too much fun in my youth to ever get run for public office. Just can't happen. My dog and dead grandma will vote for you. Well, we appreciate your support. I'm Jack Campbell, and I support this message, my dog and dead grandma. Oh, I needed that one this morning, 4P. Thank you. Metal Seer, gifted 5 Nobody Special memberships. Thank you so much, Metal Seer. And hey, to you 5 baby melons, welcome to the Melon Patch, guys. Just a reminder, you get a free super chat every single month. Feel free to use that, and I will read and respond to your questions, thoughts, and concerns live on the air. Thanks again, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. Mr. BTB says, as a holder of SLV, can I get physical silver? No, you cannot unless you're in the club, being the authorized participants list. The authorized participants, in other words, banks and hedge funds, they're the only ones who are allowed to redeem SLV shares for physical silver. If you buy the SLV trust, you cannot. Now, that is a risk if it ever comes to the failure of the ETF, which it's actually a trust. It's not an ETF. It's basically an ETF. But if it ever comes down to failure, the authorized participants eat and you don't. So understand what you hold when you hold SLV. You do not own physical silver, right? You own price exposure to the movement of the underlying silver, but it is not an automatic correlation, All right. So look, every now and then I trade SOV. If I see something in the charts and I think a big move is coming in the metal, I might buy call options in SOV just to make a levered bet on the directional movement of silver. But that is not a substitute for holding the physical metal. Good question, Mr. BTB. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, do you remember Scott McNeely's quote about PE ratios? Scott McNeely, I remember that name and I remember my reaction to that name. I texted it to you. Hey, do you know where I can get some cheap Tiger King merch? Yeah, there you go. There you go, Telegraph Imposter Man. Tiger King, what the heck? Why would Pasta Man be asking me about Tiger King? Well, I guess, guys, you're just going to have to wait. You're just going to have to wait for that one. I'm telling you, this story is bizarre as get out. You are not going to believe what I found here. And look, the Scott McNeely quote, I definitely remember the name McNeely. He was involved in something having to do with commercial real estate recently. But I can't remember the quote about PE ratios for the life of me. Did he text it to me? Come on, Pasta. Come through for me, brother. What was the quote? All right. Now I remember Scott McNeely. It was not the commercial real estate. Scott McNeely, what the hell were you thinking? That was his quote. Wow. Yeah, I've used that in my own videos. Scott McNeely talking about his, 10 times sales is what Sun Microsystems was trading at. And the quote was like, basically like, if I paid you back, if I gave to my investors every dollar of revenue, no power bills, no labor, no insurance, no taxes, no cost of goods sold, no nothing. Every single dollar that my company takes in goes right to my shareholders at 10 times sales. It'll still take me 10 years to pay you back. Yep. What are we at right now? A lot of these AI companies, SpaceX, they want to IPO at 100 times sales. What the hell were you thinking? Thank you, Pasta Man. It took me a minute to get there, but I got to it. What the hell were you thinking was Scott McNeely's quote, and that was a banger. Harmon Air LLC, thank you for supporting the channel. It says something Reserve Regime Powell said in the speech. It's a group effort, so you can't just blame Powell during his final days. Oh, yeah, it was a team effort. Yep, good work, team. Yeah, but you know what? Powell is the figurehead for that team, so he is the one who gets the blame. Just like, you know, when a company posts a bad quarter, it's not just the CEO's fault, but the CEO is the one who gets fired, right? Because he's the figurehead. That's how it works. That's the perks. When you become the man in charge and you get all the benefits, like, you know, insider trading that come along with it, that's the cost, is you're the figurehead, which means you're the one who goes in the guillotine when the pitchforks and the torches come out. So, yeah, good effort, team. Now that my disastrous tenure as Fed chair is coming to an end, it was a team effort. Just a reminder, it's not all my fault. Thank you, Harmon Air LLC. Four P's is back again. Forgot Mitch. Sorry, Bubs. Yes, talking about Mitch Vexler. Also a very good point. Mitch Vexler, who is leading the charge against property taxes, in other words, feudalism in the United States. He has been a regular appearance over at Real Estate Mindset with Travis. Mitch, thank you for everything you do. And thank you, Mr. Four P's, for that reminder and for the shout out to Mitch Vexler. Do you see what I see, says Only an Acre. Says, is silver now at $63? You know, we're going to start like chiming into a Christmas song. Yes, sir. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Silver March. Silver futures 6308. Hey, how about 64? Those are rookie numbers in this racket. You got to bump those up, right? $64 silver. Come on, baby. I like the shiny. Again, guys, not an instrument of speculation. This is a savings vehicle to protect you from the idiots at the Federal Reserve and Wall Street in Washington, D.C., who are robbing your savings, all right? So be careful on leverage, as always. Don't get too ahead of yourselves. Look at that 2011 chart and the sell-off that followed the vertical move in 2011, all right? Don't get too creative. Don't go out and start piling in the levered products that you don't understand. Be careful. That's all. Thank you very much, Only an Acre, for supporting the channel. I like this shiny. Tom Dillon says the extra $8 billion in the National Defense Authorization Act was a tip for the lobbyists. Science got to wet their beak. Got to wet the beaks. Yes, as a raiser of chicks, I understand that reference. Get yourself something nice, little something for the effort. Here's an extra $8 billion, you know. And it's amazing, right? We're supposed to be cutting spending, and the president says, I want $893 billion, and Congress is like, that's hardly enough. Here's $901 billion, only in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Tom Dillon. It's amazing, isn't it? Isn't that just amazing how that works? Appreciate the support of the channel, sir. M. McMillan 601 says, thoughts on Alcoa and aluminum in general. I don't follow Alcoa all that closely. That being said, Alcoa is the target of support of these tariffs on aluminum. Now, here's the problem. The tariffs on steel and aluminum, although so far they've been relatively consistent, President Trump is entirely unpredictable on tariffs. They're on again one day, off again another day, on again, off again, on again, off again. 90 days, 30 days, we're going to make a deal. We don't have a deal. 90 days to a deal. All right. So the biggest bull case for Alcoa is the tariff support. And the tariff support is just all over the place. So I personally, I'm not in that name, but understand what the underlying fundamentals of the trade are. You are banking on that support from the government being there. And it's up to you to make the call if you think it's going to be there or not. That's without tariffs, Alcoa is going to stay where it was. That being said, aluminum is a vital metal. And look, I'm in other names like defense names I talked about yesterday because I think the inevitability of this conflict in the South China Sea, I hope it doesn't happen, but I think it's inevitable. A name like Alcoa will do very well in that environment. So that's something to think about as well. And last but not least, I want to welcome Jim Dornfield, 8616 to the Melonheads. Thank you so much, Jim, for supporting the channel. Appreciate that very much. Shout out to all you Melonheads members on the channel right now. Thank you guys for everything you do. Don't forget, you can use those super chats anytime you want. I'll read and respond to your questions. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Appreciate all the generosity in the super chats. Thank you to my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below, all that good stuff. Should you feel so inclined, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the YouTube algorithm. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small, dream big.